Under the Radar, bringing movies and people together, one frame at a time.
Hey guys, I'm Randy Younger, and this is another episode of Under the Radar, bringing movies and people together, one frame at a time. And with me tonight, I have a wonderful panel of guest critics. As always, we have Mr. Eric Godfrey. Welcome back, Eric.
Glad to be here.
And first time to the show, Mr. Tyler Michael. Hey, Tyler.
Hello. Good to be here.
Yeah, I met you on a film shoot a little over a year ago, and that was a weird experience, but a really cool one because I got to meet really awesome people such as yourself. So I'm so happy that we can finally have you on the show. So welcome, sir.
Thank you. And it's an honor to be here with you. It's been so long. I'm so happy to hear and see you again after so long.
You're so sweet. You're a good man. Good man. Thank you.
How are you?
Thank you. So tonight we're gonna dive deep into a film that is celebrating its 25th anniversary. It is Steven Spielberg's epic war saga, Saving Private Ryan. And before we get into that, I just wanted to quickly mention a really cool event that actually Tyler and I both attended, though on separate days, unfortunately. However, we did attend Troma Dance, and it is a three-day film festival, all things Troma. If you guys are not familiar with Troma, they've been around for 50 years now, and they specialize in, you know, horror and science fiction, and just totally ridiculous, bloody, sexy movies. And I was only there for one day, but I got my fill of Troma films. And, you know, it was a great, great weekend. It was from Friday to Sunday. And like I said, there were screenings. There was actually a drag show. There was trivia. I won a shot of whiskey answering correctly one trivia question, and that was, which U.S. state does the Toxic Avenger take place in? Gentlemen?
You know? Jersey, isn't it?
Yes, very good. Yeah. I don't have whiskey on me, but you earned that shot, sir. But that was last night, and also Lloyd Kaufman was there on Saturday, and Tyler, I believe you were there to witness that awesomeness.
Yes, I was, and I've never met him. I've heard great things about him. I was a little nervous to approach him because I'm new at Troma, so I didn't know what to say, but I love his personality in the films I did see him in and how he is in interviews. Yeah. And if it wasn't for my friend Margaret, who brought me up to him, I never would have had this wonderful experience because I felt really at home when talking to him. He's a great guy.
Yeah, he's just so down to earth and really cool, kind of like a nice uncle. And
if I may, he actually, I actually would call him the horror B-movie version of Mel Brooks.
Well, I like that. And they might be from the same neighborhood too. I wouldn't be surprised. Eric, are you familiar? Well, you know about Toxic Avenger.
I grew up on a couple of Troma films. I wasn't really as in-depth of them, but I was always aware of them. They'd always be at the local video store and I'd check them out, of course. You know, never couldn't really watch them when people are around because of the explicit content that would be involved in them. Okay. But I will always treasure Lloyd, the fact that technically everybody should be aware of Lloyd Kaufman, because I mean the fact that he had a cameo in Guardians of the Galaxy, that gun brought him in, and it's like, and I'm just sitting there, I'm like, I remember watching Guardians 1, I'm like, that's Lloyd Kaufman in a Marvel movie.
Yeah, that was a little.
Well, I mean, James Gunn did start out in Troma.
Yeah, exactly. It was Gunn. So. It says Gunn paying back to where he got to start at. I love that they let him have that cameo.
Which Guardians was that? Was that
one? That was the first one. Because when they're in the prison, he's up on one of the prisoners.
I'll tell you that the first time, and one of the few instances I've had with Troma was the Toxic Crusaders TV show, the cartoon back in the early 90s.
Yep, I remember that.
And
I can't believe that was a thing.
Yeah, it was a thing. It was basically like kind of like a Ninja Turtles version of the Toxic Avenger. turning Toxie into the leader of this like eco-friendly band of superheroes. It was bizarre, man.
You're looking at the 80s and 90s when RoboCop had a cartoon, like Rambo had a cartoon.
Yeah,
it's like
right.
There was a lot of weird taking these R-rated violent movies, and here's the kid version for your action figure needs.
Terminator Q action figures too.
Yeah, exactly.
And they were really good action figures too. Like Toxic Crusaders was done by Playmates, who also did the Turtles line. And they had ooze, they had really cool accessories and great vehicles too.
If I remember right, they basically marketed it as, hey, you like Ninja Turtles, try Toxic Avenger.
Right, basically. And then the parents would show them the Toxic Avenger and they would be traumatized for life. So, but Trauma Dance is fantastic. I only regret that I only went to one day of it. I really wish I experienced the whole thing. And it would have been cool to meet Lloyd again, because I met him at New York Comic Con a couple of years ago. And again, real class act, cool guy. And Eric, maybe I'll see you there next year.
Maybe, who knows?
Tyler, I know.
It would be fun to go.
All right, guys. So let's get into Saving Private Ryan. And, this movie is a lot to unpack. And it is insanely violent, but at the same time, tasteful and respectful of American history and veterans. And, I cannot think of a better duo than Spielberg and Tom Hanks to basically bring this story to the screen. And, for those who have been living under a rock, but, the story is a group of soldiers led by Hanks are basically ordered to bring back Matt Damon's character, Private Ryan, who is the sole surviving sibling of three brothers. His three other brothers have been killed in action. And basically, to spare the mother even more grief, this band of brothers must go into harm's way to bring him back and bring him home safely to his mom. And along the way, there are some amazing battle sequences. The effects are so realistic. The production value here is beyond the charts. It's insane at how realistic this must have been for the veterans to see. And I think this is arguably the greatest war film of all time. It is definitely the most realistic, I'm assuming. And, it's a Spielberg film, so obviously the budget's high and the attention to detail is just so perfect. This is just a fantastic film, and, I can't praise it enough. It's celebrating its 25th anniversary, and, if you are interested in American history, in war history, this is definitely the film to see. Tyler, I know you're new to the show, but I want to hear your thoughts, sir, of Saving Private Ryan.
Well, I do want to mention something in the history before I begin, something I just found very interesting because I did some research on the film because I love studying more about a film than just watching it. And it turns out that Spielberg, unsurprisingly, but still, was heavily interested in World War II since he was a kid. Naturally, because part of that is because his father served in the war, and right. He'd bring back souvenirs like leather jackets, goggles, as well as his, of course, medals. And Spielberg started making, war movies when he was a kid at 14 years old, which helped him grow his love and interest in making a war film. And he was obsessed with World War II documentaries. And what pretty much motivated him to make this movie was he got the idea when he read about a young private who was dropped in with 1st Airborne in Normandy before the invasion. His brothers died the same week, and there was a rescue sent to find him. So there wasn't a real Saving Private Ryan, but it was based on a semi-true story.
The Nealon brothers, I believe.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So that really fascinated me, how the film was made. And I have not seen this film since I was in middle school, which is over 10 years.
Right.
And I remember liking the beginning, and after that, I just thought it was okay, but yeah. I was in an environment where people were talking around me, And also I was a middle schooler and my attention span couldn't really, you know, last that long, even though I was highly into films and I really wanted to love it. So this podcast finally gave me the chance to revisit it after it's long overdue. And oh my gosh, it is better than I remember it.
Yeah. It's really like a fine wine. It just gets better with age. And I think I saw this when it was on DVD. I don't think I saw it in theaters back when it came out in 98. You did, Eric?
Okay. I did. My family, because my dad was a very big World War II person, and I was old enough, and we had been hearing so much about it. So we actually did go see Saving Private Ryan in theaters when it came out, and it was amazing. And in theaters, I mean, that's a movie you didn't hear a peep from anybody almost the entire movie.
I'll bet. Yeah, I got a new sound system. So this was one of the first movies that I played to break it in, and it did not disappoint. This movie needs to be experienced, not just seen, but experienced, you know, eyes and ears. This is really the technical wizardry that went into this is just unparalleled. I can't think of a better sounding film out there. I just want to touch on the, you know, the acting a bit. So you've got Tom Hanks in his prime, 1998. He was a megastar at this point. Same year he did You've Got Mail. This is a slightly different tone than that. but you've also got, so obviously Hanks, you've got Matt Damon, you've got Edward Burns, Tom Sizemore, Barry Pepper, Giovanni Ribisi, Vin Diesel in an early role, Adam Goldberg and Jeremy Davies. You also have a painfully short part by Bryan Cranston, who plays a War Department soldier. And also Ted Danson's in it, Dennis Farina, Paul Giamatti. Yeah, it's like you've got, I love the supporting cast in this movie because it's so like random.
It reminds me, it was the thing of when I always, it's, you know, one of the things you hear a lot, you know, they don't make them like they used to, kind of. And one of the things about this one that kind of reminded me of that is when you would get a big blockbuster like this, even it would be like I didn't know that they were going to show up in this. Like it would, because it wasn't like you wouldn't have like somebody announce like, "Ooh, Ted Danson's been cast for a small cameo." And they, like, so it would just be like, you'd be watching the movie and there's Ted Danson. There's, you know, even though he wasn't known at the time, there's Nathan Fillion. There's, you know, Paul Giamatti.
I know. For some reason, Ted Danson stood out the most to me.
I think because he was probably the most well-known cameo.
Right.
At that time.
Yeah, and he only had maybe like 4 minutes of screen time or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I also want to mention Janusz Kaminski. Probably butchered that. I think I always butcher that, but
I think you actually got that right.
Anyway, Kaminski is a fantastic cinematographer. He's worked with Spielberg on a number of films. I think one of his earlier ones was The Lost World Jurassic Park, which was a year prior to this. But just the way he shoots a film, the I think it's called the bleach effect, or it's just a bleached like look. It's everything's washed out, and it is so appropriate here with this movie because it kind of like feels like you're in the 40s.
Yeah, well, this one was kind of the one. Like, what's funny is how much Saving Private Ryan originated so much that everybody took like the washed out filth, all like the negative, like that all came because of Saving Private Ryan.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, definitely. Everybody was trying to emulate that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Without question. And honestly, I would argue that the color scheme works better here in Save It Private Ryan than it did in The Lost World of Jurassic Park, where I just felt like it was taking itself way, way too seriously, where it just sucks out fun.
Yeah.
What Spielberg and them were trying to create was they were basically trying to create a look where it looked like it came off the cover of Time magazine, like the old ones where they would show the classic World War II photo. So they wanted to create a look like that. And so that's the reason why they did that. And that's why it's just an incredible looking film.
Oh, without question.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Also, Michael Kahn served as editor, who has been with Spielberg since, I want to say the 70s or at least the 80s. And he has worked on almost like a good chunk of Spielberg's filmography. And this film is obviously, you know, a continuation of that fantastic work. this film has it has won so many Oscars. It's ridiculous.
Except for one that's very controversial.
I know. Yeah. Thank you, Eric. So yeah, Shakespeare in Love, that won Best Picture this year, which I'm not a huge fan of that movie. I mean, it's good, but I don't think it's better than Saving Private Ryan. It's very hard to kind of differentiate. Yeah.
I mean, I really love Shakespeare in Love, but I'm not going to lie. I think Saving Private Ryan should have won.
Yes.
I mean, there's a history. Like, that was the start of the historical Weinstein whining and dining Academy voters to get them to flip to his movies. And that was probably the most successful campaign, because if it wasn't for him coming in and basically marketing Shakespeare in Love as that, Saving Private Ryan would have won. But like, that's a whole rabbit hole to go down.
it reminds me of 1994 when Forrest Gump beat out Pulp Fiction. But I mean, they're both fantastic films as well.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So it's really hard to just like differentiate and kind of gauge popularity or what's better. You know, it's just ridiculous. They're all great films.
The one thing I want to comment on is we've talked about all, of course. Like, I realized it had been a while since I had rewatched it. I've seen it a number of times. Saw it in theaters when it first came out. And it's one of those things that, of course, it sticks with you. And it's hard not to, the most iconic thing, of course, being the first 20-minute, the opening, the D-Day landing sequence, one of the most just brutally filmed wars, like changed how war was portrayed on film. To going from the John Wayne heroes of duty and patriotism to showing the blood, chaos, and absolute destruction that the soldiers of the war went through. And even the fact that Spielberg had no problem showing war crimes very nonchalantly, showing soldiers killing, like surrendering German, like it's like, that's a war crime, which of course pays very much into the movie. But what the thing that I had forgotten about was, beyond just those amazing sequences, how well written this script was.
The thing was
the character work that's being done, like especially during all of D-Day, the fact that we're establishing this entire squad in the midst of this chaos, and that by the time it's even done, we know from Tom Hanks's Captain Miller to Sizemore's Sergeant Horvat to even our amazing sniper Private Jackson, you know, it's like we're getting them all set up as they're dealing with this, you know, chaos of the landings. And then just watching that great quiet character work as the movie continues, as each one of them struggles to ask, you know, what's a life worth?
And you know,
and
what?
And that's what I forgot, of how good the writing is in this movie. Right.
Oh, yeah. And what really delivers the writing is 100% the acting, because going back to this film, I thought this film was going to be very preachy with its anti-war themes. Mm-hmm. Like, I felt like we're going to get one pretentious speech after another, after another. And it does have its speech moments, but they feel earned because the film's not overcrowded with them. And on top of it all, Spielberg at one point had the actors just improvise their lines, offset, recorded them, and then incorporated what they said into the script. So when you watch the actors together, it feels naturalistic. It doesn't feel like we're watching a Hollywood movie most of the time. Yeah. You feel like these are not characters. You feel like these are actual people that served in war. They do have their stereotypes, but they feel more down to earth. They feel grounded. And that's what I really love about it.
Well, I think that Spielberg is very much trying to capture the notion of the working man fighting. The fact that these were, you know, school teachers, that these were just average people that were asked to do extraordinary things, and how little he even passes judgment in the horrible things that they have to do, because at the end of the day, everybody from the Germans to the Americans, they weren't, you know, it is a patriotic movie in the sense that it is highlighting the American soldier, but it's highlighting them in a way of, they're just trying to get home. That's all everybody's trying to do. And no matter what it takes, that's what they're going to do. And to be fair, anybody in that situation, that's what you're probably going to do. Yeah. Even if it means being a coward and not going up the stairs to fight a German soldier to rescue a friend, or ordering, you know, doing all kinds of terrible things. So it's like, it's an incredibly realistic movie in terms of people rising and not rising to the occasion.
These aren't superheroes. They're not action stars. These are just regular Joes. They're just they have orders. They go out there, and you know, no matter what, they're going to get the job done. And I want to also, highlight the fact that this script was rewritten a few times, and it was basically, it started out great. It got even better, and it was kind of distilled into what we see here in the final film. And I honestly was, I rewatched it the other night, and I became invested in each and every one of these soldiers. Like, you know, a few of them die throughout the movie. I don't know. Do you think it's a spoiler if I mention?
I think we can, I think at 25 years we can talk about the, because it's such a powerful ending too.
At least people have been warned that we're going into spoiler territory, you know?
Yeah. But Vin Diesel, that was heartbreaking. Giovanni Ribisi, and of course, Eric, you touched on Adam Goldberg's scene. That is
always, for me, that's the, like, one of the most brutal. That's a war. Because that one's personal. Like, that death scene is.
Because
even that one, watching again, is hard to watch.
He's not even screaming or yelling for help. He's just slowly getting murdered.
Yeah.
It's really...
It's a hero losing the knife fight.
Yeah, it was just really horrific to rewatch. It just gets worse and worse. But I want to go back to the Battle of Normandy. That film, actually, the film itself, I think the total was about 50 or 60 million in budget. But that one scene, I think, cost 12 million because of all the extras. I think there were 1,500 extras. Mm-hmm. And obviously a very, expansive, location, a lot going on, lots of soldiers getting massacred. And what a way to open the film. I mean, it's literally explosive. It brings you right into the war. And there are a few other battle sequences throughout the film that are also fantastic, but the Battle of Normandy will be forever, it'll always stay with me.
I had to pick one scene that embodies the chaos of war, the needless, countless deaths. It's the Battle of Normandy sequence from this movie, because you never know when someone's going to die. Once it starts, it hits you like a ton of bricks, and it never slows down until the ending. It just keeps going and going with one death, one surprise after another. You feel like you're part of the troop. You're not sure what to do. You're not sure where to go. You're not sure how they're going to do it. Yeah. And everywhere you turn, somebody's dying. There are bombs going off. It is just a horrific scene that is fantastically filmed in every sense of the word.
Can you believe that Spielberg didn't storyboard this? That he just...
Wow. Oh, really?
Wow. Because he was too afraid that he wanted the camera to be in on the action. So he was afraid that by storyboarding it, he would lose out on the whole being there with the troops during all those sequences.
It's insane.
And part of what makes that scene so effective is the handheld camera, because you really feel like you're in the situation. Yeah. I just love how it shakes. I love how some of the blood gets on the camera. It's a really intense sequence that still stands out to this day.
And also, so Industrial Light and Magic, who's done the computer generated imagery for most of Spielberg's films, most notably Jurassic Park, they contributed some work here, and it's very subtle, but there are some bullet holes, some shots, there's some explosions, there's a scene, a very wide shot where we see the entire beach, and there's you see ships in the background, you see these balloons or blimps or whatever in the sky. I also want to credit ILM for that wonderful work as well, for not beating us over the head with the special effects, but kind of making it subtle, and it elevates the story a little bit.
Well, reminder of the actual Operation Overlord, the actual invasion, the D-Day, as brutal as that part is, that was a small itty bitty little chunk of the entire operation spread over miles, five different beaches, and miles. So it's like, that's just that little section of beach that they were on. The chaos was happening for miles and miles across that entire beach.
That's insane to fathom that.
Exactly.
Oh, so 25 years, and this is a movie that you can't really watch every couple of weeks or months. It took me like a good decade to revisit it, and I'm really glad I did. I'm probably gonna see it in another 10 years. We'll see. But
that's why I was glad to revisit it, because again, the writing, there's a lot of little things that I didn't pick up on till like this version. Like, sure. Especially a lot of little things that made the moment when John Miller, Tom Hanks's character, gives his big speech about his being the school teacher, you know, being the school teacher, and how nobody recognizes that in him anymore because of what the war has done to him, and about him trying to do the one good thing so that he can go back to being that husband and that school teacher again. Mm-hmm. And how there's a lot of actually little subtle conversations between him and Upham, and different ones that actually where you see people missing out on what Tom Hanks is supposed to be till he gives that speech and actually makes that land a lot harder this time than it ever did.
I guess. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. And I love the whole subplot of the pool, trying to figure out what he does for a living back at home. Mm-hmm. And that was really clever.
Yeah. Or the little subtlety of all of them carrying Vin Diesel's letter, of each person of that letter making its way to the end, to the point where even Ed Burns gets the letter, and that you're watching that letter make its way through all the soldiers.
Yeah, it's fantastic. This movie, again, it gets better and better. Also, a fantastic, very understated score by Maestro John Williams, and he delivers one of his best themes, maybe his best militaristic theme. Very solemn. I think the actual name of it is Hymn to the Fallen. And
that's right.
It is quite beautiful. And Tyler, I don't know if you know, but I am a huge score aficionado. I love film music. And Williams definitely knocked it out of the park here.
He did. He really did. It's one of his most underrated works after hearing it again.
Indeed, indeed. So guys, we just have a few minutes left, and I just wanted to just touch on some other Spielberg films, most notably his dramatic work. Aside from Private Ryan, what other dramatic Spielberg films come to mind when you think of his work?
Schindler's List.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Best Picture, Best Director, Best Picture of 1993.
The companion piece to, even though it wasn't really, it was him and Hanks producing the great companion piece to Saving Private Ryan, Band of Brothers.
Right.
Which is a fantastic series.
Right. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think all seasons are streaming now on Max.
Mm-hmm. So
if anyone wants to, you know, continue with the World War II lesson, Band of Brothers definitely continues the story in a beautiful way.
Yeah, if you want to read about the very crazy true story about the 101st Airborne Easy Company, which Private Ryan is a part of, and that he is a part of the 101st that airdropped in prior to the landing. And so you get a good look at the paratroopers during World War II.
That's it.
And how they were in the front line of everything.
In case you didn't have enough World War II action, horror, right?
Because like I said, they were there for the D-Day. They were there for Market Garden. They were there for Battle of the Bulge. Like, they were on the front line on all the worst things for World War II and the European operation.
And also, I haven't really seen it, but the Pacific, does that also kind of in the same vein?
That's also part of this Hanks Spielberg World War II universe.
Gotcha. I'd say for me, one of the most intense dramatic works of Spielberg is The Color Purple, which I watched it once. It was my first and last time. I mean, I'm probably going to see it again in the future. But that movie is difficult to watch.
Well, I think you might want to see it again because they're going to do a remake.
They're remaking it.
Because it's the adaptation of the musical, which Rachel and I got to see on Broadway, and it's incredible. Ooh, wow. And so I'm looking forward to what you mentioned, the because that's what's coming out this Christmas, is the musical adaptation.
Okay.
Good to know. It's funny because the trailer I saw didn't really advertise it as a musical. It advertised itself as a drama. But again, trailers can be false. I mean, that's
But it's an amazing musical. The musical, even to give you a hint of how good the music is, the lead actress who played, I cannot remember who played the main woman, Cynthia Erivo in the musical. That was the year Hamilton came out and took every Tony except for Best Actress, which she won over Hamilton. That's she, how good it was. Wow.
Was she supposed to be Whoopi Goldberg's character?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. I'm definitely.
It's incredible music, so I'm looking forward to this. And I know Rachel is really looking forward to this adaptation.
Good to know. Maybe we'll review it in a future episode.
And another first dramatic work, I think. Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I would love to join you guys for the review if possible.
Yeah.
Not to invite myself or anything like that.
No, that's cool. That's cool.
I think one of the most underrated dramatic works that Spielberg put out was Munich.
Oh, Munich's fantastic, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I see that.
I think I've mentioned in previous episode that Spielberg, he sometimes does like two movies in 1 year. And one of those movies would be like a fun adventure type movie. And then the other would be like this really heavy drama. Obviously the case in point is Jurassic Park and Schindler's List. Then he did Lost World and then Amistad. And then it's not really a fun movie, but it's more fun than Munich, but War of the Worlds and Munich in 2005. So there's and also Minority Report and Catch Me If You Can, but those are both fun movies. So it depends. He's a fantastic filmmaker.
Oh yeah, he's perfect at both genres, whether it's drama or sci-fi adventure or horror.
Yeah.
He's just amazing.
And
one of my favorites for a special reason.
Yeah, for sure. Likewise. And also I want to rattle off a few names here. I rewatched Lincoln right before this broadcast, and that was fantastic. You've got Daniel Day-Lewis as Abraham Lincoln. He knocked it out of the park. I'm not sure if he won the Oscar for Best Actor, but you know, he's won three Oscars and he's retired now. So he's left the spot for sure. We've got Lincoln, Bridge of Spies was very good. Oh, Empire of the Sun, fantastic. I actually saw that for the first time, I think, last year. Love it. War Horse was pretty good. And got The Post. And
The Post was excellent.
Yeah. Again, he works extremely well with Hanks. Rounding out things, I would say Always from 1989, which is a kind of a quiet film, kind of, you know, again, understated. And he did that the same year as Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. So there you go again. The fun and the mayhem. So.
And the fact that two of his best movies have been just recently with his brilliant remake of West Side Story and The Fablemans, which is just amazing. It's like the fact that he's still putting out his best work.
I know, man. He nothing is slowing this man down, you know. No. And I've mentioned on the show before, but I'm trying to coin the phrase Spiel nerd. And I think tonight we're all Spiel nerds. So I am proud of that. So guys, we are just about out of time, but Eric, I know. You usually don't have plugs. Actually, you never have plugs.
No, except nothing to talk about.
Or maybe anything on Rachel's end.
Oh well, Rachel's with the Law of Donut Engineering in Jersey City. Always, if you're looking for good donuts, best place to check out.
Perfect. And Tyler, Michael, sir, any plugs for you? Anything you want to mention?
Well, I do write on a blog called Tyler the Movie Maniac. You can also follow me on Instagram or Facebook, preferably Instagram. And I haven't been posting a lot lately because I've been busy with college and other works, but I am working on a big list, which I'm going to announce right now. I'm going into new territory. Instead of reviewing a movie, I am reviewing a video game series, and that is the 007 video games, because those are my introduction to the 007 films, well, the franchise in general. So I thought while doing a ranking, I thought I might as well review them. It's new territory. I never did video games before, at least never reviewed them to a playable degree. And I figured since it connects to my love for the franchise, why not?
Oh, so, man. Amazing. That's so cool. Wow, these are great games. Wow, these are really bad games.
Honestly, I've enjoyed them all, but there are ones that are better than others.
Everything or nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Everything or nothing.
That's a perfect third person.
That is totally up there. Yes. That's what I'm working on right now. And spoiler, it is the third entry on my list.
I loved Everything or Nothing. That's one of my favorite Bond games.
I love the weapon selection. The handheld rocket launcher was my favorite. But literally, like just a few weeks ago, Tyler, my friend Kevin, he bought me the adapter and the cables for the N64, which was compatible to my TV. And we had a few proximity mine battles multiplayer. And that game holds up since
it does.
It is amazing.
It does.
Love it. So yeah, if you would like another guest on your show for that, hey, I'm open. I am open to that. We'll talk more.
Of course. Again, it's not a show, it's written material, but
I'm sorry.
Okay, but who knows? Maybe I might do a show one of these days.
Hey, why not? I'm open to that. That's cool. Also, guys, I did not want to end the Saving Private Ryan discussion too prematurely, but there was a really quick moment. I think it's the last battle scene where they're waiting for the German troops to arrive, the enemy, and there you hear a distant sound of one of the tanks coming, and immediately I thought of another Spielberg film. I thought of Jaws. Kind of like that impending doom. And I don't know. I should have mentioned earlier, but I'm glad I got it.
And the T-Rex from Jurassic Park with the water, the rumble. Yeah.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Spielberg is a master of suspense. He's a master of adventure and drama. And, you know, I want to thank you guys for tonight. This was a wonderful show. And any chance I get to talk Spielberg, you know I'm down for that. So thank you, guys.
Same. Especially on the revisit. Something that's amazing at Saving Private Ryan.
Sure, for sure.
I mean, one of Spielberg's films is one of my third favorite films of all time, and that is Jaws. So
nice. Yeah, I think my third favorite film after Ghostbusters and Back to the Future. Well, Back to the Future is Spielberg, but directed by him, Jurassic Park. That's number three.
Right. Oh, yeah. Definitely also, my top five.
Yes. So guys, also those listening and watching right now, you can check out new episodes of Under the Radar on Manhattan Neighborhood Network every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. Also feel free to subscribe to the Under the Radar YouTube channel, subscribe and share, spread the love, basically. But yeah, Eric, Tyler, I want to thank you so much for your time tonight. This was a great show. And I'll see you guys soon. I'm Randy Unger. This has been Under the Radar. We'll see you next time, guys.